This is Tom.
Yes, hello. This is Demetra from the Wisdom Working Group. Hello.
Hey, Demetra, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good, good. Excellent. So is now still a good time to do our phone interview?
Yes, I've got found a quiet place here in the house. If you hear some dogs barking, that means someone's drove up. But
Okay.
so otherwise, we shouldn't be interrupted.
Okay, wonderful, wonderful. And let me know if my voice is far away or distant or too quiet, just let me know and I'll make sure I'm talking right into the phone.
Yeah, you sound great so far.
Good.
Could you, before we start, could you tell me a little bit about what y'all, I know y'all are, it sounds like, I guess this is under Dr. Ifoma, right? She putting together this manual she's talked about for a couple of years.
Yes.
Okay, and are you a student?
I am. I'm a graduate student, just now
Okay.
graduating in May.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate
Is
that.
she still running is it called the American Studies Program?
She is. She is.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
She's the director.
I remember when she got promoted to that, I guess a couple years ago. Yeah, okay. Well, give her my best.
Oh.
Do you see her often?
Occasionally, every now and
Yeah.
then. She's
Yeah.
one busy lady.
I get that answer a lot. When I talk to people that are helping her out, yeah. Okay. All right.
I know. She's got a
Yeah.
lot of different programs that she manages and different responsibilities at the university.
Oh my
But
goodness,
she
yeah.
does.
Yeah.
It's amazing how much she manages. But I will see her again in the next few weeks at some point. So I will
Okay, yeah.
definitely pass along your regards. Yes.
Thank you.
I
Thank you.
will. Of course. Of course.
Okay. Well, I guess
Okay.
we could proceed then.
All right. So yes, as you know, this is for that replication manual to give to other communities. And so I'm going to record our conversation here, and
Okay.
it's only going to be shared though with the writers on our team for the manual. It's not going to be any kind of public information. So just for
Okay.
us to make sure we have down everything that you said accurately to take into consideration for the book.
Okay.
Okay, great. Do you have any other questions before we start?
I don't think so.
Okay, well, feel free to ask anything at any point if something does come to mind.
Thank you.
All right. So I will run down the list that I gave you.
Thank you for that, by
And
the way.
oh, I know it does help. I'm glad that you asked for that. It does help to have a gander and be prepared, that way. Nothing
Sure.
will. Yeah. So
I'll try
wonderful.
not to be too wordy. Sometimes I could get going.
All right. All right. If I feel like we've got enough information, I'll just interject.
Not a
We
problem.
can.
Not a
Okay. All
problem.
It's a deal. All right. And by the same token, if there's a question that is just like, well, I don't know, I wasn't involved with that, then we'll stick
Sure.
with that. Yeah. So,
Okay.
okay. Right. So starting with our first question, so this is about the planning and the day-to-day operations of the program. Were you involved in planning the Wisdom of the Elders program?
Yeah, I think so to an extent. It probably would be good to maybe talk just briefly about how it evolved on our end. I guess you know already that I know you're going to ask me this, but I was the superintendent of the Patterson Park Community Center for 10 years, and during that 10-year I was approached by Dr. Ifoma. I'm going to call her Dr. Ifoma. I pronounce her first name a little better than her last name.
Yes.
But her and Teresa Flores approached me some years ago, and they had received, I believe, a humanities grant for a Voices from Our America program, which is, I've learned more about that program through the years. It encompasses quite a bit. You're probably familiar with it, but
yeah.
It was a youth program that they had received a grant for, and they were basically to work with youth. I can't remember whether it was targeted for inner city youth, but that was certainly the main demographic in our center. But they wanted to do that program, and I can't articulate too much about what the exact mission of that was, but it was basically to expose, I think I formally like to call rural views of the kids, the different cultures and different demographics, and kind of expand their quote unquote worldview, which was a great program. But
right.
So they did that program down there and brought, they had enough funds to actually hire a staff person. We provide the facility, et cetera, and had the kids come in and participate in it. And during that course of that program, we had discussions, those discussions involved one of the other groups in inner city that we were really trying to draw into the center and engage were the seniors, and the seniors in the community. And that, this might be information overload, but it's good background. The center is a huge 111,000 square foot center that was built, beautiful center. I don't know if you've been there, but
yes, it's lovely. I'm always amazed by it, actually.
Yeah, well, it was put on top of a small neighborhood center of 15,000 square foot, and that center, and that was put on top of a piece of property that had been before integration, it was basically the center of Black cultural activities in Murfreesboro, and it was Black Communities Park, quote unquote, And so a lot of the older people in the community used to come to that little community center, play cards and such, and engage. Well, during the 3 or 4 years it took to build the larger regional community center, there was a disconnect. It kind of threw them out of kilter, and even though we had seniors coming in and walking and maybe using some of the exercise equipment, some of the old activities and the social engagement that the inner city seniors were doing kind of got lost in the shuffle with the construction of the big building. So it was always a challenge for us to bring that, draw that back in. So we talked about that with Dr. Iafoma, and we also talked about how one of the ideas that we had that we wanted with our kids was to have them interact with the seniors. Because I personally, as a staff, we felt that, that needs to be as much of that as possible for seniors to pass on and interact with the children over and above their family relationships, And we thought that would be a positive thing for the center and get the seniors engaged. So I found her staff kind of took the ball with that. And next thing I know, they showed up with, well, let me back up a little bit. We did a couple of activities with the seniors and the children as part of that, and probably the focal activity was something called a sock hop, where the staff put on a 50 sock hop to show what these seniors, what they did as children, and it involved the kids in the center. And you may know all this already, but I just want to a little bit of background.
Right.
And so that was a real nice thing. It turned off really well. And then the program wound up, and I managed to, and I believe, if I remember right, it was through Vanderbilt Medical College. I believe it was a mental health grant.
You have a good memory.
to do a program specifically with the seniors, and thus started the Wisdom of Elders program. You know, and I believe if I remember right, that grant took us through, I guess, one calendar year, and we'll talk more about that, how we kept the program going after the grant fund money dissipated. So, as far as planning for that, the Vanderbilt basically came up with the concepts and the program, and obviously wrote the grant and showed up with it. We were thrilled. At that point, our role was planning, basically came into logistics, you know, and obviously we wanted to continue the Patterson Park Center was the ideal place to do these programs from. I can't speak for Vanderbilt, but I got the impression they felt so, and we certainly felt so because it really fell under our mission to engage the inner city community, you know, in activities and as much as possible. And so it came down, once the grant came in, and it came down to the logistics of, well. And probably the key one was bringing into, I know in your paperwork it talks about program facilitators, and I guess, you know, it kind of falls back to definitions, which I guess is a big part of a manual, but I guess facilitators are basically the people who kind of oversee the program. It's a short term, but we actually have the people, the volunteers that came in to actually lead the programs. The program fell into three different sections where we had a visual arts section, a genealogy section. I think you know all this. And we had.
And that's who we're calling the facilitators in this context, is the workshop leaders.
Staff leader is a facilitator?
So in this context, yeah, those are the facilitators, you know, Mary Watkins and Dr. Smith and Barbara Hodges.
Those are facilitators?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So you call them staff?
So probably a
good thing to, you know, while we're talking is, I thought about this, if they're considered staff, the volunteers, and we got the staff from Vanderbilt sent down people in different, you know, either interns or helped out the last two or three years in a sort of a different role, and we had our community center staff. So there's really kind of three. Mm-hmm. Categories of staff, you know, which probably needs to be differentiated, you know.
Yeah.
And that was not without its, when we get on further, and I know I'm jumping ahead, not without its bumps and bruises,
sure.
At times, but it all worked out really well. So we come down, so organizing those, Dr. Hodges, the artist, Mary Watkins, all the Dr. Smith, the three main ones that facilitated the program and actually led the programs, already working with the center in other programs as volunteers. So they were kind of in place, but we kind of connected them up with Dr. Ifoma, and she kind of took the ball and, I believe put together the curriculum. So basically, sit down with them and put together the curriculum. We provided, especially at the outset of the program, since there was a grant, and I thought I was actually able to pay someone from out of her budget to. And when I say her budget, that was kind of confusing too, because when she came through with a second grant. For some reason, that money actually had to be put into the city budget, but still, we considered it kind of her grant. But for some reason, it had the conditions of the grant, as opposed to the Voice of America grant. She administered the the funding for Vanderbilt, but the funding, the money actually had to be placed in the city budget. We had to go through some paces with that. Mm. And I guess that kind of falls under planning, you know. So I had to kind of take the ball as part of a budgetary process. We had to plan how to put the funds in place and make them available to use, and oversight over the funds, et cetera, you know. And so they kind of fell under the city rules and regulations, which a little different from doing it outside. And then, of course, the logistics of the room. We had the room, the space. We had to have a comfortable space to do it. And then organizing the food was a big part of the program, which we'll probably talk about later. That was a very interesting part of the program. The actual breaking of bread, so to speak, was considered pretty important. And later on, that became a budgetary concern when we ran out of grant funds. But so basically, we were very involved with the logistics. I think early on, we weren't, when I say we, I'm talking about Murfreesboro Parks and Recreation, myself as superintendent of the center, and basically the Patterson staff. You know, we were involved a whole lot in the curriculum. I believe Vanderbilt and the facilitators basically put together the curriculum and went with it.
That's a little multi-volume history.
I'm sorry if that's overload, but I think it's you know, because it all kind of weaves together. From year to year, this program, you know, we gave it a lot of thought on how to, you know, make it self-generating, and of course, IFOMA was always looking at it as, like what's going on now is something that could be duplicated in other locations, because I believe we called it successful here, and still, and the fact that it's still going on under another name, and that's another issue. It's actually under another name now, but because we cannot use the Wisdom of Elders name. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, I am.
Okay,
she talks
good,
about
okay.
that a lot, and how she sees that as a triumphant success of the program, is that now the community has taken it on, and it's the community's work, and it continues to thrive. I think she would have seen that as, I don't know if she would have seen it as a failure, but as a shortcoming if, say, we came in and then we went out and then that was that, and then everyone forgot about it. So the fact that it was built by and for the community, and it has so much meaning, so much so that the community continues it. She's so proud of it. She sees that as such a major triumph of community-based work. So, yeah.
As she should
Great.
Be, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
I'll follow up with any questions if I'm not filled in the proper blanks here.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. So you've talked about the planning of the program involving all of these parts and components, a lot of people involved. How much were you involved in the implementation and day-to-day operations?
Well, Superintendent of the Center, I was responsible for, you know, providing and scheduling the space. We did have staff, programming staff that we assigned to it, and that morphed over the years where, you know, our staff basically helped to manage staff during the first year. Then our staff played a larger role on, you know, helping coordinate the facilitators, as you called them. So organized the staff after the first year. Well, the first year, I guess I was involved in the budget, since I had to go through the city system and make the payments. The budget was set up by IFOMA stuff. We just kind of went along as long as it didn't contradict any city purchasing policies. We basically followed the Bandy's lead on that the first year while we were using the grant funds. So handling the, you know, so I was well involved in the budget and making the payments. I was involved in, we were involved in providing some staff. We were involved in providing the space. But basically, the that changed after the first couple of years. So this thing kind of morphed for, but at the beginning, that was our involvement.
Okay.
Was it hard?
I'm asking a new question here, but was it hard dealing with the budget and managing the budget, or was it more straightforward because there was a grant involved? Because you mentioned it becoming part of the city's budget, and I wonder if that causes any complications.
I thought I might be able to speak to why that had to happen. There's something to do with the grant language that required the funds to be administered through the city. I just had that was not, it wasn't too difficult. I kind of used to, you know, I just had to go through, you know, and get it approved by the city to accept those funds into the budget and manage them ourselves, and that went pretty smooth. And then as far as dispensing out the funds dispersing them, you know, we pretty much had a plan on what we were going to do with them, and the city kind of requested that. They didn't want us to go, you know, they wanted to have some oversight over that since they were partially responsible that they be spent right.
Mm.
So, you know, that, but was it difficult? Not really. There was a, And I'll be frank with you. I probably pushed the envelope at times, you know, on behalf of on city rules to keep the program going, you know, and we'll talk about that more later. After the budget kind of fell completely under us after the grant, basically, the budget eventually, you know, we had to provide for the food budget, et cetera, and supply, buy supplies and that kind of stuff. Although after the grant finished, I might be jumping forward again too, but IFOMA did still, she did the same thing from her end where she was pulling stuff out of, I think she was pushing the envelope too, and probably in her departmental budget, she was scratching out some funds to keep to send like interns and such down from Vanderbilt to help us. Does that make sense?
Right.
I know I'm getting maybe away from your question, but it wasn't too difficult as far as the grant thing. But budgeting during the whole thing was always a challenge after the grant. Am I leaping forward too much to talk about that?
Oh, no. Go
okay.
Ahead. I mean, it's kind of, it is a challenge, which we have in a later question, but we can talk about that now. Yeah.
Yeah. So after the grant funding stopped, we wanted to continue the program and we did. But we had to come up with and try to apply for we tried to apply for some local grants to, you know, we looked at two or three different things. We were not successful, and that's when the first time it kind of reared its head a little bit, where the academic side of the program, and I don't know if I'm using the right word, but the fact that the propriety, the ownership of the Wisdom program out of Vanderbilt became sensitive because I was trying to scratch around and find some money in local grants, but FOMA said, well, we got to be real careful because, you know, Vanderbilt has proprietary use of the name and all this kind of stuff, and any grant money we receive, you know, has to, you know, can't conflict with that. You know, I'm not articulating this very good, but that's the first time that kind of reared its head as an issue, and it wasn't the last time, but it was. And I said, oh, this is getting kind of complicated because, you know, obviously Dr. IFOMA was trying to, you know, had the vision of where she wanted this to go and come, and at the same time, our hands were tied a little bit going after some funding because of that.
Interesting.
And And, of course, that came up later with the name and stuff like that. It was a little bit confusing to us, and it was something that wasn't on our radar at first. So Foma and I finally had a really good conversation about that, because I'll never forget when we applied for an award through the umbrella professional organization with Parks and Recreation. I'm sure you're aware of this. We got a 4-star programming award, which is the highest award for programming in the state of Tennessee in parks programs.
Congratulations on that, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you. And we felt it was well deserved, you know, because it was such a dynamic and such a, you know, vibrant program.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I never forget the conversation when Ifomo brought up this proprietary stuff about name and how you do the program and all this, and you got to get permissions from Vanderbilt to do this and that, and that whole concept, and I don't know how you articulate this in the manual, and it might not need to be, the fact that after the manual, but it might not need to be, but in the Parks and Rec world, like when we went to the conference and we give a presentation about the program or we apply for an award, in the Parks and Rec world, you know, everyone shares what they do and encourages other communities to do it. There's no proprietary thing in it at all. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But in the academic world, there apparently is, and I don't have a total understanding of it, but I understand a whole lot more than I did, you know, and that kind of comes under the challenges, the unexpected challenges that came up, you know, later, you know, in your question.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm jumping back and forth on things, and hopefully you can sort it out. But
so
back to the budgeting, that kind of affected the grant process. In the end, we didn't get any local grants, but because it got a little complicated, not the only reason, we sometimes just don't get them. And,
sure.
So we had to kind of get creative, and I have basically what I had to do, especially the first year after the grant ended, was I had to kind of find some money in my budget at the community center under other general headings, you know, because we didn't have it budgeted for Wisdom Valley's program. And the food was a big expense, you know, and because we were providing lunch for all the participants. Well, in the Parks and Rec world, that's really never done. You know, you might do it for a one-time event, you know, provide some food, get some sponsors. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, we do a lot of programs, and our programming budget is not that large, but we do a lot of programs. But you know, for a one-time event, we might do food. But for an ongoing weekly event that lasts for months and months, providing food is a very large expense, you know, that cities don't usually pick up. So I had to get pretty creative and scratch and claw on my budget to make that happen. And we even had to do a little potluck, and even Mary and some of the facilitators, and even myself would, you know, toward the end when I ran out of money that I could, discretionary money that I could use for that, we all started buying the food ourselves, you know, to kind of keep it going. You know, we'd take turns and provide lunch on different days. So I remember I did a couple of times, and Mary and Barbara and I think Ifoma and them and Dolores, you know, everyone mm-hmm. was really chipping in to make it happen, because it was felt, especially, you know, I was kind of willing to try it without that, and I was almost forced to try without the food, but Ifoma was very adamant that it was, and we stuck with that, that was important, you know, I know working with seniors under other things that if you go to any senior center, food's important. And the whole concept of breaking bread, and I use that term, but, you know, the coming together and relaxing and talking, and it kind of comes back to that comfort level, which is something we need to talk about here in a little bit, with, you know, about the needs of the program. It's very important to create a comfort level, you know, over and above, you know, a lot of things come into that. But,
right.
Yeah. So the budget got, it was hard, and one thing that happened in my running subject in the history of the program with us is that I bought into the program. Now, I think everyone agreed with that, and I was going to do everything I can within my budget to make it keep happening with the food, help with supplies. I think the original grant was for $5,000, you know, to do it for what you would call two semesters. I think we did it in the fall and spring is kind of how we did it, just kind of almost coincided with school semesters and kind of took time off during the summer. And I was able to do that, and then I tried to start sticking that in the budget. And if you can imagine sticking $3,000 or $5,000 in the budget when my total program and budget was $5,000 to begin with, you know. So I'm spending $5,000 to do 20 programs, and I got $5,000 over here to do one. So that was raising some eyebrows with the city. Well, what happened then, and it caused a little bit of hard feelings, but there was some dialogue back and forth, and someone, you know, from someone kind of got the ear of one of our council people in the city, and in the end, it was a great thing, you know, but it created a couple of people in the parks department weren't amused about it. It didn't really bother me. I was kind of glad. I wish I would have known about it in a way, but someone, you know, went straight to the council person and got them fired up, and they went to city manager and say, hey, I want this money in the budget, you know, for this program. Mm. So that stepped on a couple toes, you know, that it created a little bit of hard feelings. But, you know, they just need to get over it. But it wasn't the smoothest thing. You know, I was thrilled that person stepped up. It was, it was Madeline Scales Harris, who was a very vocal black woman on our council, a wonderful woman. You know, I've known her family for years, and she's fearless, you know, and she found out, and she wanted, and someone got in her ear about the program, said the city, you know, was having a hard time funding, and the city manager doesn't like to be approached by council people, you know, about, you know, Parks and Rec programs, you know, but it created a little bit of a...
Heard about it?
Well, it got a little confusing there. It was during a period of time when, and this is, you know, some of the difficulties with the program. I administered that program, basically, and all that program was under me. Well, during this whole process, as Superintendent Patterson, the Parks Department restructured, and they hired another superintendent. We had three superintendents, but they decided to have five superintendents. Well, they hired a superintendent to be in charge of programming. Okay, so what happened was the program, even though I was still providing the space in Patterson and I was still involved because I was providing some logistics, the oversight of the program went under another superintendent. Okay.
Oh.
That superintendent that's when this happened. You know, and that superintendent and I had a meeting with Miss Scales and the Parks Department and the Parks Director, and 'cause she called a meeting between us before that happened and said, hey, what's it going to take to keep this program going? And I said before her and the Parks Director, I said, hey, it's going to take a minimum of $3,000, preferably five, you know, to keep it going on an annual basis. And she told the Parks Director, well, I want this done. You want me to go talk to the city manager? This is all in my office, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, no, I'll take care of it. Well, fast forward to the next budget, and there was a little money in there, but nothing to that extent, you know. So I don't know what transpired there, but so once again, even though I had a little money visiting for the program, I still had to scratch and claw. At that time, it got turned over to another superintendent, Well, he came to me. He was all fit to be tied about a month later after he took over his program and said, well, the people from Vanderbilt have talked to directly to, are talking directly to the council and got them stirred up to put money into the budget, and that made him mad, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I said, and I tried to calm him down. I said, well, you know, do you know that happened? You know, you don't know, you know. So I never found out what transpired, but I knew that he felt that it was that behind his back, Vanderbilt had gone behind his back and kind of interfered with what he considered his business, you know, running the program, you know, and getting it sorted out. And he it kind of ruffled his feathers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But long story short, which is, you know, eventually, you know, eventually the program got put right back in. That experiment, eventually they decided, hey, these programs are best run by the superintendent of Patterson, you know, because everyone's getting ruffled and all this, you know. So eventually the program came back under me, and I was glad for it because that little experiment in restructuring the Parks Department didn't seem to work out too good, you know.
Yeah.
Is that all clear as mud? but the good thing of that, you know, after we got through all the feathers being ruffled, but the good thing was we had money in the budget, you know, and we had you know, we had an angel on the console that was making sure it was there.
Yeah.
So and since I retired, I've been kind of following that. I can't tell you exactly how much is there, but I'll call up the. My successor and say, hey, you know, because that's one of the programs I still follow. And I say, hey, are you still getting funding for that? He says, yeah, I'm still, they're still putting money in the budget every year for that. So,
mm-hmm.
But when you asked, was it difficult? It wasn't without its bumps and bruises, you know, to keep the funding going for it, you know.
Sure. I'm
so,
going to
go
shift
ahead.
Back to our third question, which we've touched upon quite a bit about your role in the day-to-day operation. So you've talked a lot about the logistics and making sure the day-to-day things are organized, as well as managing the budget and making sure that the funding's in place. And out of these stories, it sounds as though another responsibility is advocacy. Would you say that is something that you took on, is becoming an advocate or finding other advocates?
Absolutely.
To keep it going? Okay.
Absolutely. You know, I'm not IFOMA, but I was sold on that. That program, you know, even though we were spending a large amount of budget per person, you know, but you shove all that aside, the intangibles from that program were huge, and I just loved every aspect of it, you know, and I just thought it was the greatest thing, one of the greatest mm-hmm. programs we did at the center, but I was fighting to keep it going, no doubt about it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Anything else in that question that you wanted to mention that we haven't, or does that pretty much cover it?
We've
talked a lot about it.
Are we talking about planning and implementing?
Yes. Okay. All right. So shifting gears, we have some questions about the workshops. And I'm looking at question 4, which is describe how you prepared for each workshop. That sounds like more of a question for the facilitators. Or was there preparation on your end, too, for the workshops?
Yeah, once before each section of workshop started and I laid down, organized the dates they came for me for the spaces and organized the staff from our end to work with them. And like you said, going through the budgets, my job became easy after that. I got to just wander into the room and enjoy watching it, you know. You know, little logistical things would come up from time to time, but I didn't have to do much on the day-to-day workshop operations except just kind of be around and, you know, see if anyone had any questions.
Right. Yeah, at that point, your great work was mostly done.
I don't know how great it was, but yeah, I had the luxury of wandering around and kind of sitting back, and that was an issue in itself about being in the program, and that might be for later about the comfort level.
Okay.
I think it's a great aspect of it about basically it falls down to a white person being in a black program and making older people comfortable without having, you know, if that makes any sense, you know.
Right.
But that did come up. So I tried to stay not wandering too much. But, you know, over the years, all the players, I knew the facilitators really well, you know. But after a while, everyone came at a comfort level with me too, you know, so I was able to sit in the program without disturbing the comfort level of the program. But that was an issue that was always there, was especially on the genealogy part of the program, where they're trying to get folks open up about their family stories and difficulties, and back in the 60s and stuff, and things got, you know, pretty intense, and get people, you know, Dr. Smith was really trying to get folks to open up, and everything was being done to, you know, to really get the seniors to open up, and, you know, just kind of trying to eliminate any kind of distractions. And after a while, I got to sit in on some of that, and it was gold for me, because I love history and I love all that, and hearing all those narratives just firsthand was just was a real bonus stuff for me, you know. But but that was a big thing about, you know, especially when you're dealing with a demographic or an ethnic group, something I've almost seen a very cognizant of, and something that was watched during the program, you know, to make sure people were comfortable, you know.
Yes. Right, of course.
I'm sorry, I probably digressed again.
It's okay. We're learning a lot of valuable information, for sure.
I hope so.
Yeah, there's a lot of material here that you're bringing up that has not come up in other interviews.
Oh,
so
wonderful,
much
wonderful.
Appreciated, yes.
Wonderful.
Do you know how often the staff met internally to plan and implement the workshops?
Now, as far as I would meet with our staff. Basically, I had no, you know, once we got it all organized at the beginning of each session, section of workshops, each cycle, I guess you call it, then basically I had an open door policy where my facilitator would come in, and we had programming meetings for all our programs in Patterson, and I would have her report on how it was going with some routers, and I had personal interest in it, so she would come in the office, and we would talk about it often, too. I'd ask, how's it going? You got any roadblocks? Everyone getting along? That kind of thing, you know, and how's the food going? It worked out great because a facilitator that's still doing it from our end, the staff person at the center, Sissy, I hope you get to talk to her, but she's also a teacher, so she was one of the ones that I could when we got really tight, and she could make a meal for 30 people, you know.
Right.
And